Hello and welcome to episode number 16 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is December 5th, 2016. I am Rollo McFlugel and with me is Slappy Jones 2 and we are both at McFlugel.com. The show notes page for this episode will be McFlugel.com/16. One quick note before we start. Bill Kristol recently was on Twitter talking about how great the Iraq War was and how a war is great in general. So we thought that in order to get him to see his handiwork, we would send him on a vacation to Iraq. So I set up a GoFundMe page to do just that. But of course, he'll never take us up on that offer, and I would never want to give him any money or support him financially in any way. So any proceeds that we get will be donated to antiwar.com for all the tremendous work that they do. So that link will be on McFlugel.com/16, or you could find it at McFlugel.com/vacation. So with that, I'll hand it off to Slappy, and he will introduce this podcast episode's topic.
Thanks, Rollo. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Today, we are going to talk about a topic that comes up when talking to our statist friends. It comes up from time to time. What about labeling on food? You know, there's laws now on the books that require putting how many calories or saying something has GMOs or whatever, organic, USDA or organic. And these are all laws and people usually, for the most part, I think right and left, which we'll call right and left, Republicans and Democrats, usually say they're good laws because everyone needs to know what they're putting in their body. And how would this happen in a free market? Wouldn't people be like stuffing all kinds of poison and bad stuff? I actually have a cousin of mine on Facebook once wrote that without government cleaning our water, they would be poisoning you and killing you. Literally, I'm not. This, it sounds like you're being sarcastic, but I'm not. He literally said that and then said, just look at the free markets in India and China. But
or look at Rollo, Michigan.
Yeah, or that. But I guess, you know, anyway, how would a free market handle labeling on foods and keeping us safe and clean and not dying? Like, how do we know that we're putting good stuff in our bodies and not getting poisoned by these people making our food?
I think there's a lot of ways that the market go about doing this. One thing is that when the market doesn't really do it, at least not explicitly, you have to ask the question is, do consumers care? Because if they're not doing it, if there's no demand for it, then what's to drive them to do it? But I've noticed, and we've seen it the past few years, it's, you know, there's that kind of organic movement going on. I don't even know. I guess organic means that there's no chemicals being used, but, you know, chemical being a very broad term. But you started noticing companies putting that on their label that they're, you know, organic. You go to the food store and there's always an organic fruits and vegetables area anywhere you can go. And then there's, you know, GMOs, like you mentioned, is a big thing. And there's all this back and forth, people in the government and people talking about it, saying, oh, we should have mandatory GMO labeling. But if you go to the food store, there's already a lot of GMO labeling on it now because people are starting to care about it. And so you don't necessarily need to force companies to say that they have genetically modified organisms in their products. It's that companies that don't have it in there are going to find that they can, you know, maybe drive some purchasing of their product through saying that, hey, we don't have GMOs in our foods. So they're going to make sure that they plaster that all over the place.
Right. Well,
that's something that consumers demand now.
Yeah, but of course, like, so you have this factory that has all these GMOs in their food, and now you have a consumer demand that says, we don't want GMOs in our food, it's not good for us and our kids and all that. And so they just tell you, no GMO. Look, there it is. It says it right on the label, I promise. So how would the market handle that?
Right. This is not a private regulation is not a new thing. I work at an oil refinery, and most of our codes and standards are private. American Society of Mechanical Engineers is the big one, and you need to you need their stamp on stuff in order to operate and get insurance.
I think
so. We need insurance to operate because if something goes wrong, we don't necessarily have the money available to pay out a lawsuit against us if we blew up a neighborhood or something, heaven forbid. So the consumer or the stakeholder, in this case, the bank or whoever, wants some verification that what they're buying is actually real. So that's, you'll have third party regulators basically providing those stamps, and then you can look them up. It happens with the consumer products already. UL, Underwriter Laboratory, Factory Mutual, FM, any consumer electronics product you buy, if you flip it over and look at the tag, there's going to be an FM or UL stamp or something like it underneath. That's private, and you know, no government involved there, because there's a market. People don't want to have their homes catch on fire. Don't want to eat products that are going to harm them. If they don't want to eat GMOs, they want to make sure that's the case. So there's all sorts of consumer protection groups out there that don't require any government guns at all to operate, and they do it very, very well.
Yeah, and there's a couple other things I'm thinking. Since, you know, in my day job, I'm in sales. We know, sales guys know, it's more expensive to get a new client than it is to keep a client. I mean, pretty much everybody knows that. So even if you have a guy who drinks Coca-Cola every day, and you're Pepsi, and you can get him to switch to drinking Pepsi every day, why would you want to kill him? It's very hard to get someone to switch. And once you get them, then they want to stay, and so you don't want to kill them. Another point I wanted to make is, for those of you old enough to remember when the internet wasn't as ubiquitous as it is today, it isn't as everywhere as it is today. Back in the 90s, I was in grade school, high school, and I remember my parents saying, absolutely do not buy anything online. You don't know where that's going. You can't trust those people. I mean, to say that today is just absurd. I mean, there's probably kids in high school who are like, who would think that is the craziest thing, is that you can't trust buying something online. And I can remember back in those days when I would browse the internet, websites would have little seals in the bottom of their page that says certified this, this, and this, whatever organization certifies that they're a legit vendor. We also had PayPal come into existence. The unregulated experiment, if you look at the history of it and how things worked and how eBay came about, now they have these number one sellers and all kinds of rules. And of course, the sellers abide by those rules, even though they won't get thrown in jail if they don't, but they'll get kicked off the website. And that's where you want to sell your stuff. So it's very costly for them to violate eBay's rules. And as far as I know, there's nothing illegal about breaking eBay's rule. I mean, maybe if you were like complete fraud and stealing money, I'm sure they could do some kind of investigation into you. But that the worry is getting kicked off the website more so than going to jail by these guys. And so the internet's a perfect example of how a market worked to get people to the point we are today, where people don't think twice about buying something online. In fact, a lot of people never go into a store anymore. They do their grocery shopping online, their Christmas shopping online. And that's just something 20 years ago was just, no one would have believed it was possible.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I know my dad, I remember it was just a few years ago, giving warnings about banking online and everything. And it's kind of like, well, I think they do a pretty good job protecting your stuff. And then, you know, it's amazing how far we can come, and it's not how does the government predict this stuff? How did the government, when the internet first came out, said that, oh, hey, I think it's going to be a major place for transactions?
Wait, what's that Paul Krugman quote? Didn't he say it was going to like die in 2 years or something?
Right, it would be less.
The fax machine, right, or something.
Faxing
like that.
would have more of an impact on society than that. But, you know, he's
always right.
Yeah, I mean, that was just one.
Yeah, one mistake.
Yeah.
So everyone gets one.
Obviously, we'll forgive him for that. Just like, you know, Bill Kristol is only had one or two mistakes, maybe. But yeah, I don't think that they would have predicted that the internet was going to be a huge place of commerce, and you know, that's no shot against them. I mean, Who would have thought of that?
Who would have? Nobody right. did. And the thing is, people were, I know people today, unless you're at a certain age, will not believe that at one time people were terrified to buy something online. But there right. was a need for it. The people selling their stuff wanted access to consumers all over the world. And the consumers wanted access to goods from all over the world. And what happens is we have this great system. And rarely do people get scammed online. I mean, I'm sure you can go Google it and they're probably going on now. But for the most part, you go shop at Amazon, eBay, wherever. You're not really scared. You're not going to get your stuff. But 20 years right. ago, people were.
Exactly. You don't know
where that credit card information is going.
Yeah. So the point I was making was that how would they know to regulate all this stuff? And they never do. And so whenever there are any problems that ever happen and people say, oh, the government should regulate it. You know, the government should have been, oh, how dare you not let the government and have this unregulated thing. But they weren't, the government wasn't asking to regulate it before that. They had no idea it was going to be a thing. So it's always behind the times. So that's with the, you know, using the GMO label, for example. They're talking about regulating it. You're going to have these bills that are brought up and politicians argue about whether or not they should regulate it or not. And in the meantime, you're going to go to the, be able to go to the store and just look at the label. And if it's got a GMO, non-GMO tag on it, then you're going to say, oh, this doesn't have GMOs in it. Or it'll say in the bottom, yeah, this is produced in a facility with GMOs. Whatever. Well, once the government gets involved, then you're going to, those labels are going to be confusing. You're not going to know what the heck is actually in it. I know.
Well, I took a picture
of a Gatorade bottle. It said naturally flavored with artificial and natural flavors. It's like if that's not government getting its hands on it, I don't know what is. And it is.
Yeah, because, just define the terms.
Right, because natural and artificial flavors have legal definitions. So it is
right.
It is convoluted.
And even just really by definition, government pretty much has to be behind. They don't lead. And the reason is, one, they need to get reelected. So you try to do something that 90% of the population is against, you're probably not getting reelected, right? So you have to wait until the population wants it anyway before they're going to do anything.
Right. Well, look at the gay marriage and everything.
Oh, of course.
And with, especially on healthcare stuff. I know where I work, you could put a gay partner on your plan as, you know, the equivalent of the spouse, you know, well before they passed the law that mandated it.
And they were doing that in life insurance as well. There were a couple companies who would, you could do a survivorship benefit on your domestic partner or whatever they were called. And that was long before anything was legal anywhere.
Right.
Well, and not every company did it, but some did.
Right. Oh, it's funny because, you know, well, how would they determine hospital visitation rights? I don't know. When you go into the hospital or when you sign up for your health insurance and, you fill out on the paper, if you go into a hospital, who do you want to let be your, speak for you if you're incapacitated? I mean, it seems pretty, if I can think of that in about 3 seconds after you ask me the question, then I don't think that millions and, or I don't know how many people, a lot smarter than me in the industry could think about this stuff on their own.
I used to do a lot of reading about ancient Rome, as I've probably mentioned on this show before, but they had wills back then and you would file them, you would write it out and say, this is what I want to happen when this happens. And you put it in the box and then people go get it. It's really, I mean, this is not a, who can visit you? Why don't you just say, these are the people I want to visit me when something happens.
Right.
And if you don't have one, well, then it's the hospital's property. And if they don't want a million people in the room, like for example, we just had a baby a little over a month ago, and they had new rules at the hospital where only two people at a time, not including the mother, were allowed in the room. So we had to have passes. Even me as the husband, father, I had to have a pass to get in this room. And they said that what happened was, so when we had our first two, you could bring as many people as you wanted in. And then they said there was people sleeping on the floors and doctors are trying to work and you got people laying all over the place. So we put this rule in. Funny how that works. There was no law mandated that said only two people are allowed in a hospital room. It was just two. And they thought of it, and it's because they needed to work. And then when we got to the recovery room, everyone could come in. It was great. But just an example of private regulation.
Yeah. So I have a question, devil's advocate question for you. So what about labeling for, say, calories? Someone like McDonald's, that, you know, the government made a law, and so they had to list on their menus and on the boards at the restaurants that how many calories are on. Before that, you wouldn't know if how many. I guess what the Big Mac has 7 billion calories in it.
Yeah, something like that. It might be 6. But yeah, so how would that work? Well, my thought is, if I own a restaurant and I'm flipping burgers and making sandwiches and giving them to people, and I have customers saying, "Do you know how many calories are in this?" My answer is probably no. I don't, because I never tested it. I never gave it to some scientist to do whatever they do to figure out how many calories are in it. But if I got enough people asking me and enough people saying, "Wow, that burger looks really big and greasy, and that probably has a lot of calories. I don't want to eat it," I'd probably go pay someone to find out how many calories are in my food. My question on top of that, and I'm sure there's an answer if I Googled it, but how do they know how many calories are in food? And how do you know that's accurate? And is it one test? I got to imagine every single sandwich, it's not, there's 1,200 calories in every single sandwich they make. Some probably have 13, some probably have 11, some probably have 10. You know, so I'm guessing it's some kind of average they do. And it's probably fairly accurate. I have no reason to deny it or to doubt it, but I don't know how they do it, and I don't know who does it, and I don't know who certifies it. They just slap a number up there, and I go, "Oh, okay." So,
exactly. You know. and even ignoring all that, and this is what I always say to people when they ask something, you know, bring this up, like, "Oh, without your free market, wouldn't have told you how many calories in there." Who goes to McDonald's and expects a healthy meal by ordering a Big Mac and fries and a, you know, milkshake or soda or whatever?
Nah, I know. That's the funny thing. Cause, you know, at one time in my life, I was actually healthy. Not that I'm unhealthy now, but I cared. And so when I would go to McDonald's, would be rare. It would be if we were out with friends and stopped at McDonald's. I wouldn't get all that stuff. I wouldn't get the McNuggets and the Big Mac and the fries. I might get a, you know, a lemonade, or I know all the sugar. Yeah, all you health people, I get it. But get a drink and maybe a cheeseburger. And that was it. And I would do that occasionally because I was eating healthy and cared about it. I didn't know how many calories were in any of that stuff. You go to McDonald's, that doesn't have sugar in it, though.
Right. It's kind of silly that people
think. I just don't think people need to worry as much as they do, because the fact is, like, when we look at the internet as the example I put, people want it. Producers, sellers want it, their clients to be confident that they're not going to steal their money or their credit card or give it out, because they want to sell their goods to the people. So they came up with ways to do that, to say, "Look, you can trust me, this society over here." And I remember websites, and they may still have them, I you know, but there used to be 5 or 6 little emblems in the corner saying, "These people certified that I'm a good vendor. I have a gold star, number one rating." You know, they were all over, because they want people to trust them. If you were shady, you wouldn't get those emblems or the code or whatever, however that works. I mean, I don't know if you could copy and paste them on your web. I don't know how that works. But,
I mean, it'd be pretty simple. If you're throwing someone's gold star on your website, then just go to that.
Go to their website and see what companies they list.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. It's, I don't know. I guess people want no work at all, because even bringing back the McDonald's thing, even before they started labeling the calories on their menus and everything, I remember, not that I ever eat at fast food very much, but the few times I would go, I remember I was curious sometimes, and I just Googled it.
Yeah.
And went on their website, and they had it listed.
And they actually used to have little pamphlets. I mean, they probably still do, but at every McDonald's, if you said how many calories are in this, before the law was passed where it has it on the menu, they would give you a little pamphlet, and it has all the calories in there. So someone who was really concerned, I'm sure that's a question you, if you're one of those health guys who really monitors how much they intake and how much they burn, you're not just going to eat whatever you want, especially from a fast food place. So you're probably going to say, "Hey, how many calories are in this?" And then they give you the pamphlet.
Well, that even begs the question, if you're that concerned, why are you even putting yourself in that position anyway?
Well, hey, man, some people have to eat in a hurry.
Yeah.
But
right, and that's fine, and that's the cost benefit you do. But if to take an extreme example, if you're worried that if something has hemlock in it, or this might be laced with arsenic, it's not labeled, but I have a suspicion that there's arsenic in there. But you know what? I'm going to roll the dice and just eat it anyway.
You're we'll an just idiot try it
if you
anyway.
Do that. Yeah, you're an idiot if you do that. I don't. There's nothing I can help you with there.
Yeah. So anyway, I think we did a decent job of saying how it could possibly work in the free market, using evidence of how it actually did and does work in the free market.
Yeah, we don't have to. Yeah, that's the beauty of stuff like this. We don't have to prove how it might work because there's already there's so many examples of it.
It already has.
Right, and each of our industries, you know, you're in insurance, I'm in refining. There's so many examples of it already working out. Just another quick thing. I remember Elizabeth Warren was giving a talk somewhere, and she said, "Oh, you know, you can thank government that your toaster doesn't burn your house down because we have regulations." And I remember as soon as I saw that, I ran into the kitchen, grabbed the toaster, flipped it over, like I was saying earlier, saw the, I forget if it was a UL or FM stamp on it, but there was a private label on it. And that's not the government. I don't know if she just was lying and she knew that that wasn't the government protecting
believes it.
Right. She probably does believe it. But it just goes to show you that stuff we take for granted, and you know, for those out there that are fellow libertarians listening to this, I think we all need to do a better job of not giving government too much credit, because I think a lot of people actually
don't deserve any.
Right. Well, they just, people assume that their regulation out there is government regulation that works well, and then the reality of it, it's actually private regulation that makes the world go around, and there's so much out there. I mean, I know the private regulation that's in my industry, and I know the stuff that Slappy talks about that is in his industry. I know the stuff that I've looked at and researched on, but there's so many other industries out there, so many other markets that I'm just not aware of the intricate details of how they work. And I'm sure they're privately regulated too, just like that. If you look up the video iPencil of how all the, and just markets in general, of how all the coordination has to happen for you to get something as simple as a pencil that costs a penny or so. I haven't bought a single pencil in a long time, but they cost basically nothing. But so much has to happen in order for that pencil to get from all the resources that is out in
called the wild. Not to mention it'd be insanely expensive for one person to do that on their own.
Exactly.
But we can get it for a nickel.
Right.
You know, the wood, the graphite, the rubber, the little thing that holds the eraser on.
Yeah.
And then get that graphite in the wood. I mean, I could never do that.
It would be extremely expensive. And each person, unless it's at the pencil factory and they're assembling a pencil, I mean, the logger doesn't know that
no one knows how to do it.
Right. He doesn't. He doesn't even know that he's cutting down. Maybe it's a tree farm that this is for the pencil factory. But who knows? But you know, you don't have to know. You know, from each step, what the goal is. It's all just coordinated through the price system, through markets, through voluntary interactions. It's actually a very beautiful and amazing thing.
Yeah. So if you have any questions or you want to challenge us, drop it in the comments section. Or check us out at McFlugel.com.
Right.
We'll be happy to respond.
Yep. And also check us out on Facebook.com/McFlugel, and also follow each of us, Rollo McFlugel and Slappy Jones 2 on Twitter. All of these links will be on the show notes page, McFlugel.com/16. So I think that's all we have for today. You have anything else, Slappy?
I think that covers it. We'll catch you next week.
All right. Thanks for listening. Make sure to share us and also subscribe on our website to our email list.
Tell your friends.
Yes. Peace. All right. Thanks.